When German chemical giant Bayer bought American seed and chemical giant Monsanto for $66 billion in cash, it became the owner of 13,400 lawsuits. And so we ask, why did Bayer buy Monsanto?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1190th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Lisbon who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, a California jury recently awarded more than $2 billion to a couple over their claims that Monsanto failed to warn them that using its weed killer Roundup would increase their risk of developing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There are, at last count, 13,400 such lawsuits pending in the state and federal courts throughout the land. If each litigant in all those lawsuits were to be awarded $2 billion, that would mean that Bayer would have to come up with another $30 billion, give or take. Given all those lawsuits and the extent of damages being awarded, it would appear as though the giant German chemical firm Bayer bought itself a pig in a poke when it paid $66 billion in cash for Monsanto. But surely the Bayer company must have known that buying Monsanto would be buying the liability for glyphosate, which the World Health Organization claims is a probable cause of cancer. And furthermore, surely it knew that glyphosate was out of patent and was being freely manufactured by many other companies. And so we ask, why did Bayer buy Monsanto? For an answer, we head off to Texas for a conversation with Misha Popoff, who is the author of Is It Organic? Misha, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Hey, thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
Yeah. One of my favorite gadflies, Misha Popoff. So,
thank you.
Before we head off into some speculation about Bayer's purchase of Monsanto, a little taste of something organic, and you being a good critic of the organic food industry, I just recently conducted an interview with one Cindy Glover, who is a data analyst, and on a survey their company put out called American Shopping Guilt. And, you know, the survey sampled 2,100 people in 25 major cities in the U.S. And out of 11 considerations, Americans cared most about the food being non-toxic and cruelty-free. But what really bowled me over, Misha, was that what Americans cared least about was whether their food was organic or not. What in the heck happened to the word organic?
Yeah, I've been talking about that for years. And the organic industry used to stand on a few principles. You know, the old analogy of the three-legged stool, it was fertility. It was natural fertility instead of synthetic ammonium nitrate, synthetic fertilizer. And lower or hopefully zero toxicity from all the chemicals. And then, yeah, for that third leg, you could have maybe cruelty-free, but they really ran onto the rocks with that one, because unless you're a vegetarian, I mean, you're talking about slaughtering animals. And in fact, as you know, back to that first leg of the stool, a lot of the fertility for a true organic farm comes from manure. So what are you going to do, just raise animals for manure and, you know, let them grow and die in their old age? No, that's called the mixed farm plan, whereby a farmer isn't just a grain farmer, as we see now with industrial farming, or isn't just, doesn't have just 100,000 turkeys in 20 barns on his farm. No, he's a mixed farmer. That's what true organics used to be. But unfortunately, it's become industrialized. So what is it? Well, it's GMO free, which is important because
wait a minute.
Yeah.
Of all of the 11 considerations that Americans care about, GMO free is second to the last, right above organic.
Oh. Wow.
So yeah, somehow,
thank you for enlightening me.
So somehow we've just lost our concern about something, whether our food is organic or GMO. We just don't care. And my point is, why don't we care anymore? What happened to us?
Well, I think they should go back to basics. It was within 2 or 3 years after the brilliant German Jew Fritz Haber discovered how to pull an endless supply of nitrogen out of the Earth's atmosphere. That was in 1917. Within 2 or 3 years, the organic industry, was called biodynamics back then, sprang up in response to that. It was a reaction to. So, in other words, organics was going to stick with that first leg of the stool, natural fertility. And so I think that would be a start, Michael. They should get back to that. And then, of course, they should also get back to the whole toxicity-free. They should give up on this cruelty-free stuff. I don't think it's cruel to slaughter an animal if it's done humanely. I eat meat. So, but, yeah, those are the first two legs of the stool, natural fertility. Oh, and lowered or hopefully zero toxicity. And as you know from, I think it was our last interview, we're still looking at almost half of the organic food being sold testing positive for prohibited pesticides. Now, people will quickly point out, well, yeah, but it's below the acceptable level according to the USDA's National Organic Program. Okay, great. But wouldn't any consumers ask themselves, yeah, but why is there any toxic chemicals in my organic food, even if they're below some threshold level?
Sure.
And I think that has eroded confidence.
And that pretty much takes us to, you know, the purchase of Monsanto by Bayer and where that leads us as well. But with respect to cruelty-free, I just think back to my grandfather who explained these things, this whole relationship of people slaughtering animals for food when I was just a wee tyke, helping him slaughter animals for food. And he said in probably not the words, but he said that, you know, every animal on this farm has a responsibility of serving this farm. And without this farm, they would have no life at all. And which is a way of saying that if we weren't to slaughter them, they probably would not have any life at all. Yeah. And that would be cruel, too. So
that's absolutely true. Can I just add? That's how come we have buffalo again? I thought they were extinct. When I was a kid, they said buffaloes were effectively extinct. Everyone knew there were a few of them in zoos or what have you. But the reason the buffalo is coming back is because of farming. So I would dovetail that with what you just said.
Yeah, and Ted Turner.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I think he owns 500,000 of them. Yeah,
and doing a good job. But at any rate, you know, another chip off the organic block, I think, was the acceptance of hydroponic farming into the organic family, which just took soil completely out of the equation entirely. So what organic means essentially now as two things, as I can see. One, it means GMO-free, and the other means that no toxic pesticides have been used in the production of the crop. Is there something I'm missing?
No, that's about it. You're right. When they accepted hydroponics, they just blew away the first leg on the three-legged stool. And I would argue that the first leg is more important than the second. Probably your average consumer hears more about toxic chemicals in our food.
That's top of the list. Toxic is top of the list, yeah.
Yeah, but from an agronomic perspective, from the farmer's perspective, if there's any profitability, because you've got to be profitable here, if there's any profitability in organic farming, it's based on his or her ability to get the toxicity the fertility naturally. That's where the bang for your buck is, or there's no organic farming. If the farmer isn't planting plow-down crops like legumes and or availing himself of manure properly composted, he's not an organic farmer. And
sure.
Again, I put that ahead of the toxicity issue. But both have been abandoned.
kind of goes back to the saying, garbage in, garbage out. If you put garbage on the soil, you're going to get garbage out with your crop too. And if you put natural fertility in with your soil, then that's what you're going to get right back. It's natural fertility.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And maybe that's what happened. Maybe people just became cognizant of the fact that organic is being, you know, watered down to such an extent that it really doesn't mean what it did when it was originated as a legal definition.
I would totally agree. Yeah. And, yeah, their only hope, if you haven't heard, there's this term now called forever chemicals, chemicals that enter our bodies and stay with us forever in minute quantities, but they remain with us. And now that certainly ties in with this Roundup issue. Roundup, which we were told is so safe you could drink it. Yeah, now we have these lawsuits. So it looks like there's some terminal effect associated with long-term exposure. And so the point being, the organic industry can always sort of latch on to the latest scare stories in the media and say, hey, we don't use Roundup, you know, and maybe that'll revive some interest. But again, they've got to get back to basics, really.
Well, let's get back to basics on this Bayer buys Monsanto piece of business. Let's just set the stage. Who the heck is Bayer anyway?
Well, they're a German pharmaceutical company, and like a lot of pharma giants, they're going to get into agriculture. Mm-hmm. So you already see like Purdue Pharma, the maker of the all those great painkillers that people are addicted to, the opioids. Of course, they're in the farming business. They're not just in the pharmacy business. They don't just sort of go to the open market to buy their opiates. They're in tight control of those sources, mostly over in the Middle East, like Afghanistan. But yeah, so back to Bayer. I think their claim to fame is really the aspirin, acetylsalicylic acid. But that's like over 100 years old.
Yeah, Bayer aspirin, right?
Yeah, that's the first and still going strong. If you have a heart condition, you're supposed to take aspirin a day. And but they're being pummeled by the off-brand of, hey, you just go buy some generic acetylsalicylic acid. It's not called aspirin, of course, but everyone knows what it is. So they're trying to branch out, and yes, they're going to go. They're already doing it now. They were doing it before they bought Monsanto, but they're trying to branch out from just being a pharmaceutical company to controlling their supply chain right back to the soil. And so God knows what they have planned, but they didn't just buy Monsanto for its existing lineup of, say, GMO crops and, of course, mm-hmm. Roundup, which you already mentioned, is off patent, so that was really worthless to them. But that's what's happening here, that they're trying to become agri-pharma, if you will.
Which is to say, the big boys of... Now, Monsanto is pretty much the big boy of conventional agriculture here in the United States, was it not?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I don't know anyone more powerful than them, even with their bad reputation.
Okay, folks, that's the subject on the table today. The big Bayer bought the big Monsanto for $66 billion. What did they get for that $66 billion? Where is it going to take Bayer and Monsanto? And above all, what the heck is it going to do to our food, the food that we eat almost every day? Because it's in just about everything. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson, Misha Popoff, and you. Do stay tuned, right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back. This is The Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking a little bit about the Bayer purchase of Monsanto. Bayer's big bet, as it were, betting $66 billion on buying the Monsanto Corporation. Now, we've all seen the headlines. We all see the TV ads about glyphosate, the awards being given, those people who were suing Monsanto Bayer. A recent jury award, $2 billion. The 13,400 lawsuits against the Bayer Monsanto folks by people who have contracted non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and that being the on the table today. So what exactly was Bayer thinking when they bought Monsanto? We're just speculating today. I don't have any inside information. Misha, do you?
Well, yeah, let's admit that we're speculating. And one thing I definitely want to admit to up front, I have no idea if Roundup causes non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I have no idea. I'm not a pathologist, and neither are you. So what we're following here is a legal battle. And I just want to throw another name out. I think it was Dow Corning. Dow Corning back in the 90s made silicone breast implants. And of course, they were sued for that, sued into bankruptcy, only to find out later that, guess what, silicone breast implants don't cause cancer. And I wouldn't say they're safe, or I wouldn't advise anyone to get them. But yeah, it turns out that for all the money they paid out, it turns out they were safe. And I'm not suggesting that's going to happen here. I just want to focus us. It's a legal battle, not a medical battle at all. The lawyers will just fight this out.
Well, I don't
think,
you know,
have to believe.
I'll disagree with you a little bit there. I think it's a little bit more than a legal battle. I think it's also kind of a spiritual battle going on too. When people just don't like Monsanto, and haven't liked Monsanto for a long time, and now Bayer bought Monsanto, so people aren't going to like Bayer either. So there's a spiritual element to this as well as a legal element. And I think it kind of fires up some of the legal part of it as well. And you know, in awarding a $2 billion award for this lawsuit, I think, you know, that spiritual element is probably working its way into the jury pool.
Yeah, definitely, because that's what happened with Dow Corning in the 90s. Definitely it becomes an emotional, or as you put it, a spiritual issue. And to be clear, Bayer didn't have a great name with the public or with farmers any more than Monsanto did. So it's kind of like putting the worst with the worst in this case. But you have to ask yourself, why did they walk into it? We get so used to hearing about acquisitions and mergers in the billions that we forget that $1 billion is a lot of money. And as you said, they paid $66 billion for Monsanto. And I don't know, are they gambling? They have no way of knowing how these lawsuits are going to play out. And yet, you know that they would not have been able to borrow that amount of money from the international money markets, Michael, unless everyone had done their due diligence, and that would include the bank itself. I mean, obviously this investment is going to be insured. The loan will be insured. And then the bank making the loan, they don't want to make a bad loan and have to pay out, you know, twice or 10 times the amount in damages. So I've suggested, as I sent you in my email, I think I wouldn't go as far as to say this is a scam. I think these are genuine lawsuits, but I think Bayer looked at this with eyes wide open, and they decided we can play this to our advantage. And the analogy would be cigarettes.
Well, hold that thought for a little while here. Let's back up and talk about exactly what Bayer bought when it did buy Monsanto. Monsanto, St. Louis, Missouri company, very, very big in glyphosate, which is a weed killer, and was selling a lot of weed killer. 1987 sold 11 million pounds of glyphosate. It was under patent at the time, but today, 300 million pounds of glyphosate are applied on the United States every year. So what made that giant leap in sales possible?
Yeah, two things. First was using Roundup as a desiccant to force ripen a crop. This happened before the advent of GMOs. And it was a sleight of hand, even though Roundup had gone through the hurdles with the regulators and was deemed safe. It was always used as a pre-emergent, or in the case of Orchard, it was used to keep grass down. So you could argue, well, the crop is up, the tree is up. But my point is, it was never applied to something we eat. Now, when you force ripen a crop, that's as close as possible as you can be to eating the food with the chemical on it. You know, because they don't apply chemicals after it's harvested. So they were force ripening crops with Roundup, And as I said, it was a sleight of hand, Michael, because they just sort of went to the regulators and said, hey, remember the Roundup you approved? You know, by then, at that point, it was like 25 years ago. They said, yeah, we're going to start using it. And they were already using it. That's another point of the sleight of hand. They were sort of field testing it without doing proper scientific field trials. They were letting farmers go out and desiccate a crop. And by the way, they discovered in doing that, that if you desiccate a hay crop to force ripen it and then feed it to cattle, the cows can spontaneously abort. So they quickly say, okay, don't use it for hay crops, for animals, but go ahead and keep using it for human crops, for human consumption. So that was the first thing that got Roundup literally into our diet. Because before that, you would go out and kill all the weeds and then wait a few days and feed your crop. Well, there's no way that Roundup got into the crop. But when you desiccate a crop, it's literally coming into contact with the crop to force ripen it. That was the first thing. The next thing was, of course, the GMO crops that came out in the 90s. And then you're applying it earlier than harvest to kill weeds in the crop. Again, you're applying something that had already been approved for something else, for pre-emergent use. You're applying it directly to the crop that is going to eventually be eaten by humans. And those two things, that like tenfolded the sales, as you described, of Roundup, but also put it right on our plate, literally.
It's in everything.
It's
in everything. We somebody tested 10 premium California wines. Even one grown with a biodynamically, without any pesticides or anything at all, all of them had glyphosate in them. It's in our blood, it's in our bones, it's everywhere. 300 million pounds a year are laid upon the United States, and now it's in everything. So,
and that's the forever. That this is a new term now. Forever chemical. It's a forever chemical. It's in your brand new baby. It's in your great-great-grandmother who's still alive in the old folks' home. We're all filled with it.
Drenched in glyphosate. So, what a great deal to buy. So Bayer So Bayer says, boy, I'm going to buy, $66 billion worth of this stuff. And they did. And now they're facing a lot of lawsuits, 13,400 lawsuits. Now, I guess there's a lot of fighting going on over the science of this by the lawyers and by the Bayer folks as well, right?
Oh, for sure. And they won't sort that out. It will not be. This will remain a legal battle, or as you so aptly put it, a spiritual battle. It'll be a propaganda campaign. And that, as I suggested, is going to play into Monsanto's hands. Unlike Dow Corning, which was driven into bankruptcy, they're going to use this to their advantage. Because, again, I point to cigarettes. What happened finally in the early 90s when the scientific community finally said, okay, cigarettes do cause cancer? I mean, they've been saying that for decades.
Well, don't give that away. Don't give that away yet. Got to hold that off a little bit because, folks, we got to get the folks speculating along with us. Why did Bayer buy Monsanto? What on earth did they see in Monsanto that you and I are scratching our head about? Why on earth would you buy something that causes so much trouble? And that, we're getting to the point where we all could sue Monsanto because we all have this forever chemical in our bodies now. So, wow. Now, what happened to Bayer when it bought Monsanto? What happened to the stock of the company?
Their stock price plummeted, and rightfully so. But this is just all on the surface. This is all now. Bowman, the CEO who spearheaded this whole thing, the CEO of Bayer. If anyone thinks he was caught with his pants down the morning after he inked the deal and woke up to see the stock price, they're missing the subterfuge that's always at play in corporate America, in global corporations. So he knew they were going to take a hit. But he couldn't tell his shareholders because, then he'd let the cat out of the bag. So he had to just take the hit. And you'll notice he hasn't stepped down. He hasn't said anything about, you know, maybe this wasn't the, you know, none of the usual backpedaling or rationalization. He's just sticking to his gun.
He has his chins up in the air, and he's standing there saying, I can take whatever you got because I have another card that I haven't played yet.
Exactly.
I have another card I haven't played yet. So if you go back and you look at the bet, you look and see that glyphosate is now off patent, which means that anybody can make glyphosate, and that's how Monsanto made a lot of its early money, was by manufacturing this weed killer under patent, and the whole world fell in love with it to a certain extent. But that's off patent now, so it's not really worth anything, is it?
Correct. It's not worth anything to Bayer under the current circumstances. By the way, neither are the GMO crops that Monsanto developed, like BT corn and all of the Roundup Ready crops like soy and canola. I mean, they're worth something, but remember, again, $66 billion is real money, especially when you're facing the huge unknown of a pending class action lawsuit.
By 13,400.
And as you said, that's probably going to grow. The lawyers are advertising for people to, hey, you think you might have a claim? Come and add your name. Like that'll probably double by the end of summer, or maybe more. So what they got is nothing. Just to finish off, by the way, with the GMO crops.
Yeah,
they got those. They're worth something. But they cost a lot of money to maintain, Michael. You have to pay pedigree and foundation seed growers. Those guys are like gods in the farming world. They grow the seed for all the other farmers to plant
for human
consumption with. Buying the patents, acquiring the ownership of all those GMO crop patents, definitely worth something, but not the panacea that Roundup once was. As you said, that really made Monsanto. Prior to that, Monsanto had, of course, made Agent Orange, which harmed a lot of our men over in Vietnam, and they never got sued for that. They got away with that scot-free. And then, of course, aspartame was a big one. Why aren't they being sued for that?
Why were they not sued for Agent Orange? Because, you know, I was over in Vietnam at that time, and a lot of my friends were, and a lot of my friends, you know, suffered mightily from Agent Orange, but nobody sued Monsanto for that.
No, unfortunately, our own elected officials headed off the vets at the pass. In fact, John McCain was involved in that. He basically headed the whole thing off and shielded Monsanto. Of course, they were shielding the Pentagon, but in so doing, they also shielded Monsanto, who should have known. They should have done their due diligence to see what side effects there were for Agent Orange. But yeah, these are obvious questions. Of all the things, why isn't Monsanto also being sued, or instead of being sued for Roundup, why aren't they being sued for these other things that are really open and shut cases, I would say. But yeah, back to Roundup. What was Bayer thinking to buy an off-patent herbicide and buy the whole company in order to?
Yeah, somebody must have been crunching numbers. You mentioned, you know, the people who loaned them the money. They must have had people sitting in, you know, in front of a computer crunching numbers. How are we going to make this work? Can we make this work? What are we going to do to make this work? Somebody must have been crunching numbers in a very big way, because that's a lot of money to put up at risk for something where there's so much trouble brewing all throughout the whole glyphosate food chain. Who's making those decisions? It had to be somebody that was working really closely with the CEO of Bayer, because they're the one that put the money on the table. Let me ask you this, Misha.
Yeah.
Can we, as agriculture, can we grow our food without glyphosate anymore? Is it possible?
Oh yeah. Even if we don't revert to a full organic system, which would be probably impossible, I would admit, even though I'm a proponent of organics. The reason we force right from crops is because farms are so big now. If we went back to smaller farms, the farmer will harvest the crop when it's ready instead of forcing it to be ready.
So glyphosate was really a way of getting rid of people like me, who was at one time in my life a teenage herbicide. No longer am I out there weeding crops or anybody else. We're using glyphosate, and we can do it on a much grander scale. So that's where we're at. But the question then, still, can we grow crops without glyphosate, or are we locked into glyphosate? And that is a key to that hidden card that Bayer might be holding. We'll see if we can reveal that card with Misha Popoff on the Food Chain Radio program. What was Bayer betting on Monsanto? Right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
$66 billion. Lot of money to bet on the Monsanto company, which is in now the proud owner of 13,400 lawsuits against the company for its glyphosate weed killer. Wow, 13,400. Probably going to be a lot more than that by the time we're all done deciding to sue Monsanto ourselves. Because most all of us have glyphosate in our bodies now. It's come through us through the wind and through our food supply. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's a forever chemical, meaning that is not going away. So, big pickle. Misha Popoff, when you wrote me about, when we started communicating about this big bet Bayer made on Monsanto, a huge bet, $66 billion bet. And you started to lay it on the table. You said, remember Upton Sinclair. Okay, I remember Upton Sinclair, of course, who wrote The Jungle about the meatpacking industry. But what about him?
Well, he set out to reform, to clean up the meat industry in America right at the turn of the last century. And it looked like it was going well. It was a best-selling book exposing the unfair, harsh labor practices, but also the lack of safety. There were no safety standards. Now, of course, if you bought your meat from a local ma and pa, well, their reputation was imbued into them as human beings, and you knew them. You're like, hey, Joe, I need another roast, you know, and you knew them, your granddaddy knew them, and there you were. But as the industrial meat industry was taking off in the early 1900s, it was just deplorable what was going on. So Upton Sinclair went undercover and exposed what was going on, and as I say, his book became a bestseller. And then Teddy Roosevelt became president because of the assassination of his predecessor. Sorry, I forget his name. And so it really looked like Teddy Roosevelt, you know, he was a Republican, but he was known as a trust buster. And he was going to clean up the meat industry. Word has it that a copy of The Jungle was on his desk at the Oval Office. So things were going well until the meat industry showed up and said to Teddy, hey, this is great. You're going to clean up our industry. Why don't you let us help you? And what they did was overregulate it to the point where all the small ma-and-pa operations were driven out of business. And Upton Sinclair, the quote he had after all of the dust settled was, I was aiming for the heart of the American public, but I hit them in the stomach. And what he meant by that was, you know, as long as you can fill people with cheap food, they'll quickly forget their emotional attachment to the old ma and pa butcher down the street they used to buy their meat from.
Right.
And that's what happened. What started out as good turned bad. And now we're stuck for the last century with, you know, meat packing giants that really don't care. And they still have problems. They still do these massive recalls. Elderly and young people still fall ill from listeriosis or E. coli. And, yeah, it's just this big, overregulated hodgepodge, mm-hmm. and it doesn't keep us safe.
So regulation, in effect, became very expensive, and only those who had the scale to be able to afford, you know, complying with all of those regulations were able to survive. All of those mom and pops, you know, the man across the street who butchered a hog could not sell you any of the meat because it would be dangerous or something like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
it was illegal, in fact. Yeah.
And so how does that apply to the secret card the folks at Bayer were holding in their consideration of buying Monsanto? And of course, we're just speculating here, but
yeah, still speculating. One more step along the way. It costs about $150 million to $200 million to bring a new GMO crop to through the licensing process in Washington, D.C. Now, that's not including all the R&D and field trials that a company will do before putting a new crop up. So $150 to $200 million, I want to make sure everyone knows, there's no safety testing. No GMO crop was ever fed to any rat or mouse or rabbit anywhere. There was no short-term or long-term. All of the so-called testing was just agronomic to see if the crops would produce well.
And they came up with the term substantial equivalency to prove that it would be good.
Yeah, to prove that they didn't need to do any feed trials. And yet, that it costs $150 to $200 million to license a new GMO crop. Now, I don't want to defend GMO crops. I don't suggest that we should have a laissez-faire regulatory process in Washington. But $150 to $200 million is just red tape, paperwork. And guess who helped the EPA and the USDA come up with that red tape? It was Monsanto and Syngenta, which Monsanto bought back in the 90s. Basically all the GMO companies, as the fervor arose, the fear of GMOs, they did the same thing the meat guys did when they went to Teddy Roosevelt. They went to Washington and they said to the Clinton administration, hey, yeah, these GMOs, who knows, they might be dangerous. Why don't you let us help you?
You know, it's exactly the same thing they did with the organic industry too. They packed their suitcases full of cash and went to Washington D.C.
Yep, and now you have an amalgamation. I mean, look, Jeff Bezos just bought Whole Foods, and so you're seeing a centralization and amalgamation of the organic industry. Sure, you still have a lot of small market gardeners and mixed farmers, but 75% of our organic food is currently being imported because all these big players who flew to Washington with their suitcases of money, they set the regulations up in such a way that it'd be very easy to bring in cheap organic food from Mexico, Turkey, and China. And so, yeah, it's very expensive to be certified organic if you're an American farmer. But it guarantees you nothing. You could be cut off at the knees by cheap imports from overseas.
Happened to me.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
When I was engaged in the garlic trade, we were growing this beautiful organic elephant garlic in the Rogue Valley of Southern Oregon and selling it in fancy places in New York City and doing really well. And then one day, a big ship showed up and in the port in San Francisco, and it was filled with organic elephant garlic from China. And that was the end of that, right?
Not only that, Michael, it was USDA certified organic.
Of course.
The USDA sells its certification anywhere in the world. And it's not even an American inspector doing it. It's a Chinese inspector. Now, nothing against the Chinese, but yeah, the same thing happened with our family farm in Saskatchewan with flax.
Yep.
We were getting upwards of $40 a bushel, which was fair. That was twice the conventional price for flax, because flax is pretty expensive compared to wheat and canola. And then we were undercut. It all happened all at once with one shipment into Canada from China.
Yeah,
nothing
there you
against
are.
Those Chinese farmers, but the people working the fields in China, Michael, growing the garlic and the flax, they probably didn't even know they were working on an organic farm. It was all run by corporations and, of course, the state apparatus of China.
So here we have the CEO of Bayer, one of the world's biggest chemical companies, buying Monsanto, seeing all of the devastation being wrought by these 13,400 lawsuits, knowing that glyphosate is now out of patent and can be manufactured by just about anybody, and yet knowing somehow, some way, he feeling secure enough to bet $66 billion, $66 billion on this company. Now, I often think of the folks who were running Monsanto, and they must have thought, boy, let's take the money and run like hell.
Yes.
As fast as we can.
Yeah, because prior to this merger or acquisition, the CEO of Monsanto admitted he had considered changing the name of Monsanto. Changing the name. Now imagine changing the name of General Motors. Imagine changing the name of Microsoft. You would never do it. You can change everything else in the company. Everything else. You can change the very architecture of your product, but you never change the brand. I mean, imagine changing Coca-Cola, but there was the CEO of Monsanto considering a name change. And yes, you're right. When the people at Bayer met him over in Zurich at some, you know, great spa, I'm sure he just thought, wow, thank God.
Yes.
God, you're smiling on him.
And you really want to buy? Well, let me think about this, so whether we want to sell or not, I'm sure. But they it was an all-cash offer, $66 billion. I'm trying to think about what that would look like, $66 billion. Wow. Big, yeah. Huge pile of money. And yet, the folks at Bayer made the bet. What the hell were they thinking, Misha Popoff? What was the secret card that they were holding?
Okay, and one last piece of the puzzle. Don't forget, it wasn't just the people at Bayer. It was their bank, maybe banks, plural, I'm not sure, but definitely some international money lender. And the insurance, both the financial insurance company for that bank and the corporate insurance company for Bayer itself. You don't do anything without, I mean, if you don't inflate the tires on a commercial airliner to the correct PSI, you're not only going to hear from the FAA in Washington, you're going to hear from your insurer, your private for-profit insurer, and they can come down just as hard as the regulators. So yes, a lot of eyes were on this deal, and also the lawsuits were well underway. So some say, well, then that probably means Bayer got a good deal. I don't know. Is $66 billion a good deal? I don't know, but it sounds like real money. But yes, I think the bet from Bayer is that they're going to recapture glyphosate. No, they can't put it back on patent. Pharmaceutical companies do that. When a pharmaceutical goes off patent, they change one or two electrons, in the
molecule. Repatent
it. And they go, there, it's a new drug. But no, they can't do that. Roundup is actually a pretty basic, simple chemical, which is why Monsanto never changed it over the last 50 years. So no, they're planning on over-regulating it, because after all, Michael, it's dangerous. You just can't have anyone using this.
So what's,
and they're going to come up.
So yeah. What is the process then? They're going to re-regulate it. Because, of course, they're large enough to have the economies of scale to be able to afford the regulation, that would mean they would chase everybody else out of business, which is a well-practiced business model by now. But still, how do you go about re-regulating glyphosate?
I think we're going to start with they're going to leave the GMO crops alone. There's no other way to do that, except to spray a standing crop when you notice the weed pressure getting to a certain level. So you have to, they're not going to change that at all. They're going to change the desiccation, the force ripening of a crop, but they're not going to eliminate it. They're just going to set down sort of the same regulations that you see with antibiotics in cattle, that you have to wait whatever it is, 21 days after the last injection of antibiotics into a cow. Something to that effect. And that in itself wouldn't seem to be too complex. But remember, without a single safety test, it costs $150 to $200 million to bring a new GMO crop to market. Like, there is nothing to it. If people would say to me, well, that doesn't sound too complicated, like that's going to drive the generic makers of glyphosate out of business just because you regulate the use of it by farmers and make sure they don't ship their crop for whatever it is, 21 days after they desiccated it. That doesn't sound too complicated. Well, neither is the regulatory process for GMOs. In fact, it's so uncomplicated, it's meaningless. There's no testing. There's no safety testing in that $150 to $200 million.
There's just the paperwork.
Exactly.
Ferociously expensive paperwork and lawyers and regulations. And so what you're saying, I think I hear, is that by re-regulating glyphosate because it's a cruel poison, that only those who can afford to participate will be able to play.
Yes, both in making it and in using it. So a lot of these lawsuits so far have not been from farmers, by the way. You'd think they'd be the first ones to succumb to non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. There are a few farmers in the pending cases, but all of the settled cases, it was a gardening worker. He was awarded, I think it was $180 million. It's been reduced to $80 million, which is still a lot of money. And then that couple you mentioned got a $2 billion settlement. They're not farmers either. They are not even gardeners. They were just using it in their landscape of their yard. Well, goodness, everyone does that. So they might eliminate some of the commercial marketing of Roundup, or they might just dilute it, you know, put a little more water in it so it's not as...
And there we are.
They'll put a new label on it that warns commercial residential users. They'll warn them.
There you go.
And that label's going to cost.
So this is speculation by Misha Popoff and Michael Olson sitting here talking. But watch for it, folks. Watch for the re-regulation of glyphosate. Food Chain Radio Program. Today we had Misha Popoff on. Misha, thank you so much for joining us. Kind of a lot of fun, and folks, stay tuned.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends miss the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.